Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Ron Swoboda, great New York Met, a legend and a World Series champion 50 years ago, 1969, and known for that miraculous catch October 15th, 1969. I want to start there because a lot of people remember you as making this terrific catch, not being someone that was a great fielder, and people didn't expect it, and you laid it out, and this kind of was the turning point. I know you wrote a book about it as well, Here's the Catch. And walk me through that game in the World Series, Game 4, and it kind of set the team off on the path to win a season that was so unforgettable for Mets fans.
Yeah, I mean, you know, by the time you get to Game 4 of the World Series, you've already dispelled a lot of doubt in a lot of people's minds, including your own, about, you know, what are you doing here? And should you be here? You're not asking those questions anymore. You're into this series, and really Game 4 was the absolute fulcrum of the World Series, and the situation I found myself in was at that same balance point. You know, we were up 1-0. Tom Seaver's on the mound. You got your best out there. The Orioles get something going in the top of the ninth inning and get a couple of back-to-back singles. Frank Robinson, Boog Powell. So they got the tying run on third base. Seaver's in a little bit of trouble. Hodges comes out. They talk a little bit about what's going to happen. There's no doubt that Seaver he's going to finish the game. And he's going to at least finish that inning unless trouble gets real big. And but he's given up a couple of knocks. And, you know, so here we are at that point where it can go either way. You lose this game and it's a series tied at two. I don't think we want to let the Orioles back into it. I don't think we want to give them any oxygen. And what happens, you know, I had worked so darn hard taking line drives and ground balls because conventional wisdom was that I wasn't that great an outfielder. I was better, I think, than conventional wisdom, which I've always said might be conventional, but it's not often wisdom. And Brooks Robinson hit a ball to my right, and I broke hard and ran 2-3 running strides. It's a line drive sinking, and I'm thinking I'm in trouble on the line that I've taken, but there's no way to change any direction. There's no way to stop. I'm going to run through this play, and I'm either going to come up with the ball or not, and I realize I need to lay out. And I lay out in full to my backhand, and that thing hits me in the web, and that glove of mine, when you hit it in the web, the ball was going nowhere. I turned it into a pretty elaborate sacrifice fly because Frank Robinson tagged up on the play. He scores easily, but we get a big out we need. And what a lot of people forget is I caught all three fly ball outs. The catch was just one of three outs that inning that I caught in right field. So I tied a major league record. We always used to joke about that. But that was a point in that World Series that could have gone either way, and then that play could have gone either way. I probably had a lot more chance of it not coming out the way we wanted it to come out. But I was on a hunt, and I took the best line I could take and ran as hard as I could and went all in and made the play.
Not only that, but then on offense in the bottom half of the inning, he ended up winning the game for the Mets.
We go into the 10th, actually. They didn't score. We didn't score in the bottom of the 9th. And they didn't score in the top of the 10th. So we went tied into the bottom of the 10th and had a runner at second base and nobody out. Hodges put a pinch runner in Rod Gasper. And he left J.C. Martin he wanted him to sacrifice him over to third base, so he'd be there with one out, the winning run at third base. We're in pretty good shape at that point. J.C. Martin puts a bunt down, and as he's running down first base, the throw to first base nicks him in the arm and rolls out into right field. And Gasper scores, and we walk it off. And now we're up 3-1. And, you know, in a game that literally could have gone either way, it goes our way in a big way, because the difference between being tied at 2 and being up 3-1 is huge, as you would imagine, in a best 4-7 series.
And, Ron, I mean, you write in your book, Here's the Catch, how important that play was for many reasons, not just the obvious and sending the team into extra innings and winning the game, that specific one. But it was really a momentum swinger for you guys. So tell me a little bit more about how that set off the team to do the unthinkable that year.
Well, now you're at home. You're up 3-1. You have a chance to win it in game 4. That was pretty frightening in its own right, in that the game had come your way. You had a chance at that point to put this thing away. It was almost a bird in hand. You had a leg up and a chance to win the game. You win the next game, you're world champions. That dawns on you with a little bit of fear, because it does feel like you've got it in your grasp almost. And you know, to let it get away when you're up 3-1 would have been an embarrassing defeat. I don't know that anything else would have been. If the Orioles had rolled us in the first 2 games, if we come out of Baltimore without a win, if we end up tied at 2 and the Orioles come back and we lose it, we could live with that, you know, but being up 3-1, that felt like, look, you blow it now and you go down in infamy a little bit, because it was yours to take. And that responsibility was interesting for us, a team that had never won anything. So it was a heady time, and you know, and you felt like you had given yourself a leg up to reward fans who had spent a lot of money and filled a lot of seats and saw very few wins, no winning seasons up until 1969 in the history of the franchise.
We're talking with 69 Met Ron Swoboda. Ron, we were talking off air about Gil Hodges, and, you know, everyone yes. talks about his leadership, what he meant to that team, and as a Marine, as someone who had a young team to manage, yes. tell me a little bit about the feel that he brought to this team that ended up winning.
Well, you think about all of the young guys that we had coming out of spring training. Amos Otis was on that team as a rookie. We had so many, Ken Boswell, Wayne Garrett. These are young guys that hadn't done a lot. Bud Harrelson hadn't done a lot, was still a young player. I was 25 years old. I had played a little bit. I wasn't a rookie anymore, and I felt like if you were going to do anything as a major leaguer, you better do it at 25, or you're not going to. And so we had a pretty good mixture, but an awful lot of young people who had never done anything, never won anything. We had those arms, you know, and a couple of those young people were Gary Gentry, Jim McAndrew, Seaver is in that group, Jerry Kuzman. These are guys, Tug McGraw, and you know, these young arms were the difference for us. Nolan Ryan is on that team. And was used out of the bullpen in both the National League playoffs and the World Series. Hodges had such a great feel for his team. When he realized, once we got Don Clendenin at the end of June, and that was basically the team we were going to be, we had run off an 11-game win streak before we got Don Clendenin. So we came out of the blue and probably showed the ownership that they might have had a little more on their hands than they thought early in the year when they turned down a trade with the Braves in spring training for Joe Torre because the Braves wanted to get into our young pitching, and we weren't ready to give it up. We didn't know what it was. I think they made a smart move. You know how they say the best deals you make sometimes are the ones you don't make. Well, the Mets didn't know what they were, and why would they? And they didn't know what these young arms could do or not. So the season started to roll out, and they started to come to some understanding, and nobody had a better feel for it than Hodges, who was analytics for that team. I mean, analytics for Hodges was in his brain, and if you played, it's because he thought that day was, you know, you needed to be out there that day. And if he pinch hit, he pinch hit because he thought this other guy is better in this situation. And I, you know, when I was writing this book, I went back. You can look up all the play-by-play sheets and box scores online, and you can go through game after game, play by play, and see the decisions that Hodges made and the situations he made him in. And he was uncanny in his ability to plug the right guy in at the right time, because that season had a lot of ebb and flow to it. But and it looked like for a long, long time we weren't going to catch the Cubs, who just didn't seem to want to fade until the end of August and into September. They went through like a 2-week period where they just hit the skids, and we went by them. We were playing our best baseball at that period of time, winning like 3 out of 4. We go by the Cubs like they're sitting on the side of the road changing a flat tire, and we never look back. So we're a team that had proven to ourselves we could win. Could we beat a team with as much Hall of Fame guys as the Baltimore Orioles? We didn't know the answer to that one, but we soon found out.
Ron, I mean, I can listen to you talk about baseball all day, and, you know, it's funny because you remember everything like it was yesterday, clearly. I mean, the play-by-play, and you know everything that went on, every single play. I guarantee Wednesday is going to be a special night for you guys.
It'll absolutely be a great night. And you know, anytime we come together, and it's Ed Cranepool and Shamsky and I, and we tell some stories, and I tell some stories out of the book I wrote that I try to put a little grin on it. You know, baseball is our careers. All of them are made up of these little vignettes, you know, and these little stories that we can relate. And in writing the book, I looked this stuff up and I got into some of the current, you know, of contemporary literature. We had great writers following the team, and a whole bunch of them wrote books, and I got them all lined up here in my office where I use them and quote it from them and attribute it to them to give some more immediacy to the book I wrote about my experience going through that season and how I got to the big leagues and growing up in Sparrows Point, Maryland, with a couple of uncles that worked in the medical examiner's office and a grandmother who married a Chinese cook, you know, who taught me how to use chopsticks when I was 9 years old. You know, I had some interesting things that happened to me along the way, and I was just a guy. I was an average player, but I worked at being a better outfielder, and all that work, you know, focused right on that play that I made, and how nice that you can 50 years later be known for the best play you ever made in baseball, as opposed to dropping a ball and losing a game and losing a series, you know? So all that from my perspective is a lot better, I would think.
Absolutely. And you'll always be remembered as a champion here in New York. And Wednesday night, you'll be there at Garden City, the Cradle of Aviation Museum, with Art Shapsky.
Yes.
And Ed Cranepool, so it'll be a fun event for you
guys. These guys are good, and the Cradle of Aviation is also a wonderful place to be. It's a wonderful air museum. I'm a big aviation fan, so it's always a good time when I can get up there and
right on Charles Lindbergh Boulevard too, and you know the history about Charles Lindbergh.
Well, he was pretty important guy, you know, and people forget that he flew in the Pacific with I think John Glenn, one of the astronauts, eventual astronauts.
Indeed, yeah.
He flew fighters with him in the Pacific. So it's the history of aviation is compelling history, because a lot of those guys early on paid with their lives. Their addiction to flying cost them big time.
Well, Ron, I'm going to let you go, but thank you so much for taking the time to chat today, and let's go Mets.
You got it, Neil. Thank you for reaching out, man. My pleasure.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.